Blog Talk Radio.
Going into the corner, Gordie Howe goes in to fight for it. He and Zygenkov have it. Back to Walt, not in front. Here's Bobby Hull, shoots good! Bobby Hull!
Judol tried to make a play. Lemieux steals, and he's up against Raymond Bork and Adam Oates. Coming to the Bruins, they got around both men. Cutting for the net, he's in on goal. Hey! Charlton scores! What a goal!
Brune carries in, rolling in front of the net, and a shot! Desjardins following the play, and he misses the short shot. Here he is again! Scores!
Hockey fans, you're listening to the hard-checking, kick-saving, sudden-death scoring NHL breakdown. I'm your host, Scott Levy, joined as always by George Kurtz of RotoExperts.com. We're bringing you all the on- and off-ice action, as well as keeping you fans and you fantasy owners fully informed at the top of your respective leagues with our fantasy reports, including the IR, goalie report, line updates, and waiver wire recommendations. Today is, of course, Friday, December 21st, inching towards the Christmas break. And we're going to be continuing our breakdown of the team power rankings that we started on Monday's show, talking about the top three teams that both George and I had in unison, Tampa Bay, Winnipeg, and Nashville, although slightly different order after that Tampa Bay Lightning, just flip-flopping the next two. We'll round out the conversation of the top five and then delve even further into it, not just today, but also next week's show. But let's kick things off, as we used to do, with the fans' reports. Lots to talk about, at least with the IR and lines reports. Starting in Anaheim, both Fowler with his facial injury and Raquel with his ankle injury are expected to start resuming skating this weekend, bringing it the general belief that they should be back before New Year's. That's certainly not a definite, but they certainly could use the reinforcements there. In Arizona, I know nothing very exciting on the ice or fantasy-wise happening in Arizona, but it is notable that they put back the top line from last year together that had a fair amount of success in Stephan Keller and Panic. Galchenyuk moves back into the top six, like I speculated he would, playing with Schmaltz and Fisher on that second line as well. And the interesting wrinkle or news coming out of Boston, now we talked about on Monday, and since that widely reported that Bergeron and Chara would likely get back into practice on Wednesday. If they did, which they did, that they were expected to come back this weekend. That has been all but confirmed that they're coming back. But the interesting wrinkle here is that Krejci was playing so well in the last eight games up on that top line. He had 5 goals, 6 assists, only 30%, 38% owned, by the way, in fantasy leagues, that they just might break up that top line instead of just moving Krejci down to the second line and plugging Bergeron back in. Now, it's certainly not been a confirmed thing, but in practice today, it was Bergeron centering Marchand and Heinen. Pasternak moves down to the second line with Krejci and Nordstrom. So don't be surprised if Cassidy gives it a game or two to see if they can sort of balance out that offense, as we constantly talk about when it comes to the Boston Bruins and looking for more than just one line that is scoring. So keep an eye on that. It sort of certainly long-term makes Krejci more appealing fantasy-wise and isn't necessarily a value detractor for Pasternak if that happens. And besides, if we have 2, 3, 4 games and this just doesn't work, you know Cassie's going to put that top line back together. If he does, for sure, split it up. It's also notable that DeBrusque was back at practice. He was at practice on Wednesday as well, coming back from a concussion. He is in a non-contact jersey, so I don't really expect him back before around New Year's, you know, so certainly after the Christmas break, for sure, you know, but it shouldn't be too much longer after that. And as I was tweeting about just the other day, sort of interesting wrinkle in Buffalo, mutual contract termination with the Buffalo Sabres. Now, for fans as well as fantasy owners, this doesn't really mean all that much. But as I pointed out on Twitter, Buffalo didn't exactly have a whole lot of cap room. And, hey, at the beginning of the season, that didn't really seem like that much of a big deal because, as a lot of us had talked about and predicted, Buffalo looks like they're progressing. That looks like they'd probably be as good as being a playoff bubble team. But as we also all know by now, they're playing a lot better than a playoff bubble team. And you know, if they keep up this good play, the playoffs is not out of the question. So this now gives them a little bit of cap room that if they want to add at the trade deadline, they could do it, having between $2.2 and $2.4 million at the cap. Also, when it comes to Skinner, a lot of people have been talking. I know Driger, I believe it was, or McKenzie was talking on national TV the other day about how the fact that there really haven't been any contract extension negotiations between the team and Skinner, but they had decided at the beginning of this season that, hey, you know what, let's Skinner get comfortable. We'll talk about it in a couple of months. Because this was brought up on national TV, some of the beat writers talked to Skinner about this specifically. He said, hey, first of all, it's going to work itself out. Second of all, we've got a little time off. We've got a little dead time in January. Don't be surprised if something starts happening around then. So it does look like things are at least trending that Skinner would likely be staying. Again, it's a little bit early to say that for sure, but things certainly looking good. Pominville, I know since that sort of nice three-week stretch that he had on the top line, he really hasn't had much value either on the ice or for fantasy owners, but he was hurt on Tuesday in a collision with Ritsalainen, had to be helped off the ice, listed as day-to-day. I don't exactly expect to see him before the Christmas break concludes as well. Gurnson as well, giving an opportunity on the second line with Milstead and Okposo. Yeah, I'm not exactly that excited about that either, the ladies and gentlemen. In Calgary, Frolik, who's been out about a month with a lower body injury, is very close to returning. Again, not too much fantasy value, but certainly he is a key defensive guy for that team. They're only going to make that team even stronger when he does come back. Bennett also returned from missing two games. And what do you know? He lands on the second line back where he was with Backstrom and Tkachuk and has a goal and assist in his return for the Flames. Speaking of returns in Carolina, as I speculated earlier in the week, Jordan Staal and Michael Ferland did indeed return to the lineup, and they landed on the same line, playing with McGinn as well. And I just also want to point out that, Svetnikov, been heating up lately. Seems like he is certainly getting comfortable, getting a lot more offensive opportunities, or at least creating more chances, playing on the line with Walmart and Justin Williams. Only 37% owned on average in fantasy hockey in the last six games. He does have 4 goals and 2 assists. Now, in a standard league, I am certainly not telling you to run out and get him, but certainly in a deeper league, if you have weakness on your wing, he is becoming somewhat appealing to, at the very least, put on your watch list. Keep an eye on. But he certainly is trending up. Now, it could just be a short hot streak, but like I said, keep an eye on that situation, especially if you do need a winger in your fantasy hockey leagues. In Chicago, Anisimov did come back playing the last couple of games for the Chicago Blackhawks and centering that second line with Patrick Kane moving Dylan Strome over to the left wing and dropping DeBrincat down to the third line, which is obviously, you know, not a whole lot of production there, but obviously DeBrincat in deeper leagues is a guy who is somewhat owned, and that's going to possibly hurt his fantasy value as well. Speaking of hurt fantasy value, although it might just be a short term for Colorado, if you are in a fantasy league with hits and you have Zadorov, he's a good guy to have. You're kind of a one-category guy, but if you are in deeper leagues, at the back end of the roster, you have those one-category guys, but he does have a lower body injury that is going to keep him out all weekend. So if you are in a league with that, you might have to cover that for this weekend. And again, really no surprise, you know, the lack of depth of scoring. We all know that in Colorado. But they have been searching for it, and Bednar came out right the other day and said, you know what, we just aren't getting anything from that second line. So over the next few games, I am just going to rotate people in and out and just keep doing it until I find something that's worked. So, you know, any sort of combination of Kerfoot, Comfier, Colin Wilson, Yost, and Andrew Getty. And if any of those guys aren't, any of those combinations really aren't working, don't be surprised to see if you get some call-ups, you know, because this is a pretty good team. Obviously, you know, still on the developmental curve after that top line, you know, and they're getting to the point where they're sort of, you know, okay, we're a good team. I think we got a good chance in the playoffs, but do we want to go out and spend our, you know, our capital to add if we're not going to get anything else going on that second line? So I think getting that second line is key to what they're going to possibly do at the trade deadline. Now, we do have a good 6-7 weeks forward there, and we know trading doesn't actually really pick up until the middle, end of January, all-star break time, but it is certainly notable and something to watch, certainly for Avalanche fans. In Columbus, Wenberg looks like he's getting a little bit more of a push in terms of the top six, playing with Foligno and Duclair. and getting a little bit more ice time. Jenner and Josh Anderson move down to the third line with Bjorkstrand as well. And look for the D pairs to be changed up. Tortorella saying he just doesn't like the way that they're playing. Warinsky and Seth Jones have been sort of split up and put back together on and off for the last few weeks. But expect more of that, and just sort of keep an eye on the situation, see if it helps stabilize that Columbus team, which is playing pretty well, but not quite at the top of their game just yet this season. In Dallas, Spezza, who was ill and day-to-day, missed the last couple of games. And don't be surprised if you don't see him until after Christmas break as well in the couple of games that they have, simply because he lost 8 pounds with this illness. I don't know if it was stomach virus or what, but it certainly has undercut him. He is questionable for Saturday, but as I said, my instinct here is that he's going to miss at least one game, if not a couple of games that they have before the Christmas break. And just sort of keep an eye on a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel, maybe, for Stars fan Gurianov, who, was up earlier in the season, and the young rookie didn't really do much. I wouldn't say that he looked lost, but he just wasn't doing much. Looking better in this recent three-game stretch since he did come back, a goal and assist in 3 games since he's been back. He was playing on the second line with Shore and Nushitskin, but he was regularly rolled up to the top line with Jamie Benn and Seguin. Now, again, I'm not making too much out of this, but it is sort of like a nice, as I said, light at the end of the tunnel with some potential, at least for Stars fan. I'm even more hesitant, for fantasy owners, but it is something to look on, keep your eye on. Fantasy owners long-term, potentially. In Edmonton, and again, I tweeted this out the other day, first big line shakeup in the top six as Hitchcock took over. He came in, as we all know, he likes to sort of put the big boys together, his best 2-3 players, put them on the same line, let them go, and figure out what's going to happen to the lines behind him. That's what he did, having Drysdale and McDavid together with Chiasson. But it was noticeable that even though his team was winning, defensive chances or offensive chances against that top line was spiking, so it's not surprising that Hitchcock is changing things up, putting Ryan Nugent-Hopkins back on the left wing on the top line with McDavid and Poole Dujarvi. And Poole Dujarvi is an interesting element here. Hitchcock is known to love big wingers, and Poole Dujarvi is a big guy. He's been playing well, and Hitchcock is sort of he's sort of been one of Hitchcock's little projects. Or specific projects since his hit over. They say he's gaining confidence, even though he hasn't been putting up a ton of – he does have a goal in the last game, but he hasn't been putting up a ton of points. But expect Hitchcock to sort of commit to Poole Dujarvi on that top line for at least a half dozen games or so to see what happens. And obviously, if he starts playing well, he's going to potentially solidify his spot there. Drysdale moves down to center of the second line with Ryder and Chiasson. Now, when it comes to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, fantasy owners were pleased to see that his fantasy value didn't completely disappear when he was moved off that McDavid line. Obviously, moving back up to the top line, that only encourages even more. So if you're looking for a center who might have a wing eligibility in your league, keep an eye on Ryan Nugent-Hopkins if he's available in your league. Now, when it comes to Drysdale, certainly there's a little bit of concern that his value is going to go down. But I remind you that if you look at the prior year and a half before this season, Drysdale actually produced more playing on a separate line from McDavid than playing with him. So this isn't necessarily a dead end. I mean, Chiasson on Ryder doesn't thrill me, and I'm not suggesting that anybody's out there saying, oh, man, he's away from McDavid, I'm dropping him. But I'm just sort of saying, caution, don't worry about it. Don't say, okay, I'm going to look to trade him now. Let this play out a little bit. It might not be as bad as at least it looks on the surface. For the Florida Panthers, Bukestad with an upper body injury did look good in practice. He wasn't expected to come back until next week, and that still might be the case. But Bubner, the coach for the Panthers, did say that he is now a possibility for Saturday's game. And it is also notable that Borgstrom, much like I was saying with Dallas and Gurianov, looking pretty good in 3 games since he has been brought up and centering that second line with Vetrano and Danzov. He does have a goal and assist in those 3 games. Now, my sense is that when Bukestad does come back, he's going to land on that second line with Bergstrom and Danzinov pushing Vetrano back down to the third line. That's really more of my gut instinct than really having a sort of confirmation on that. But keep an eye on that situation as Florida themselves looking for a little bit of balanced scoring after that top line as well. In L.A., I was even debating whether to even bring this up because, frankly, it's L.A. and just not much good has been happening there. But Kent Bain moved up to the second line to play with Carter and Toffoli. Kovalchuk has been confirmed to be returning to the lineup on Saturday, playing the right wing on the third line with Nate Thompson and Leipzig. No, I am not telling you to trip over yourself and pick up Kovalchuk, but it is worthy to be aware of. You never know. He could be sort of rounded to shape and could be a depth guy, certainly in, deeper leagues. In Minnesota, some surprising bad news. We talked about Dumba and the injury on Monday's show, and now he got a second opinion, and earlier today it was confirmed that he is going to need surgery early next week, and he is going to be out a significant amount of time. Now, they don't have any sort of specific official declaration on how long it's going to be, but when you're saying significant amount of time, you got to imagine minimum of a month, if not 2 months, just from everything that it's sounding like here. Either way, if you're a fantasy owner and you have Dumba, you do need to look for some kind of replacement. When it comes to the Lions, no surprise that the Lions are shaping up more like we've seen them all season as Zucker returns to the top line with Staal and Granlund, Koivu centering the second line with Parise and Niedermeyer as well. In Nashville, Ekholm, Ill, missed one game, listed as day-to-day, not really expected to be out long. In fact, it is kind of expected he will be back the next game, but certainly keep an eye on that situation. Cision rolled his ankle, and it looked bad. He needed help off the ice on Tuesday. Did not look good. Don't be surprised if he hits the IR sometime soon. And Subban, I mean, hey, man, we've been waiting for Subban to come back. There were sort of hints that he'd be coming back for the better part of the last week and a half to 2 weeks. He's been practicing regularly as the extra pair on defense at practice, but not getting back into the games with the upper body injury. I do expect him to not get back into the games this weekend and come back after the Christmas break for the Nashville Predators. In New Jersey, Marcus Johansson, given an opportunity on top line with Hershier and Palmieri, moving Taylor Hall down the second line with Dejack and Coleman, obviously looking to sort of spread out the offense there. Didn't really work, and Hall ends up getting double shift quite a lot in the second half of that game yesterday between the first and the second line. So I really wouldn't be surprised if we see the lines more as we expected them and, or have seen them most of this year with Hall returning to the top line. At least that is my gut feeling there. In Ottawa, it has been confirmed that Matthew Shane, with that groin injury that's kept him out for six games, will be returning tonight, centering the second line between Tierney and Boedeker. I wouldn't be surprised if sooner rather than later you see Dzingel return to playing with Duchesne, because they have had a pretty decent amount of chemistry there, but that's not the case to begin with. Dzingel on third line with Zach Smith and Bobby Ryan for the Ottawa Senators. In Philadelphia, something to keep in mind with the Philadelphia Flyers now that Scott Gordon is the coach. Do not trust those line combinations that you see the reporters reporting during practice. He is known for changing up his lines and not using the lines that he uses in practice in games, and that's exactly what this had this week, because I reported on Monday how, it was interesting, how Nolan Patrick was practicing with Giroux on the top line at Raffle, and it didn't play out like that at all. The lines are more like they've been recently, with Giroux centering that top line with JVR, and Kanasi, second line, Couturier, Voracek, and Simmons, and Nolan Patrick on the third line with Lawton and Raffle. But if you are one of those people who's checking with the beat writers for those line combinations, which by and large is usually a good thing to go by, don't trust it with Scott Gordon. For the Pittsburgh Penguins, a couple of guys coming back this week. We've had Hornquist back for a couple games now. Dominic Simon returning in their last game. You still have that top line of Gunsell, Crosby, and Rust together. It's been playing well the last half dozen, eight games or so. And the second line started last night with Malkin centering Dominic Simon and Kessel. Halfway through the game, they moved Kessel down to the third line and Hornquist up to the second line. So your third line is now Brassard, Kessel, and Pearson. Don't be surprised if those if the lines stay that way, at least for the next couple of games, as Malkin and Kessel seem to be a little bit of oil and water They either are working great or they're working terribly together, and lately it just doesn't seem like they're clicking at all, which is why I think that they are going to be separated at least for the short term. And also for the Pittsburgh Penguin, Oleksiak, concussion from that fight that he had with Tom Wilson, the fight that we pretty much all was going to expect it to happen and happen right away. And for all that you want to say about Tom Wilson and whether he is a coward or not in turning down fights, it obviously got to him, and he showed, yes, I can be a heavyweight if I want, even though we know fighting is cool, is rightly so, going away the dinosaur in hockey. I got to say, it was kind of an impressive fight, at least I thought so. In St. Louis, changing up the lines a little bit, looking like they did at the beginning of last year, and it's somewhat effective in the last few games. There's Tarasenko playing with Braden Schenn and Schwartz, which moves O'Reilly and Steen down to second line to play with David Perron for the St. Louis Blues. In Tampa Bay, shaking up the lines a little bit. One nice thing about when Cooper changes up the lines is that he tends to stick with them for at least a bunch of games. So it gives you a little bit of confidence that, okay, these combinations are going to have some legs, at least short-term, and if it works, obviously, it's going to go longer than that. JT Miller returns to the top line, playing with Stamkos and Tyler Johnson. Palat moves down to the second line with Braden Point and Kucherov, and Gord is the one that you sort of notice in terms of potential devaluation, moving down to the third line with Cirelli and Killorn. Gord's still going to get his power play time, though, so it's not like his, fantasy value is just going to disappear, in a puff of smoke either. In Toronto, Heyman with an ankle injury is going to keep him out for the next 3 weeks, and Connor Brown gets the opportunity to replace him on the top line with Tavares and Mariner. And then finally, in Vegas, Matt Pacioretty with a lower body injury, left the game earlier in the week, lands on the IR, is going to be out until after Christmas. Now, they called up Brandon Free and played him in Pacioretty's spot with Stasny and Tuck, and it looked reasonably good, but Gallant kind of went out of his way to say, yeah, I'm not committing to that. So don't be running out and getting a Perry even on the short term for this weekend, because the very next game, it might not be that combination. All right, folks, there's your IR launch report as we turn our attention to George Kurtz, me and the mumbling today. And, I guess I got to start you off with, or at least asking your opinion about the new Vezina Trophy candidate in Philadelphia. But in all seriousness, George, looking at Carter Hart in Philadelphia, I know it's just two games, and I want to stress, okay, just two games. So I'm really not going that crazy, but I thought he looked pretty darn good. And that second game, okay, first game against Detroit at home, not exactly, the biggest challenge in the world. But second game against Nashville, and I understand Nashville has some injuries there, but that's a pretty darn good Nashville team. We were talking about on Monday, they're in our top three in our power rankings, which we'll get back to that power rankings conversation later in the show. So are going to show me something for the very brief glimpse that we've had of Hart. So, George, for fantasy owners, are you telling them if they have a goalie need to run out and get Carter Hutton? Or it's still like, okay, you can get him, but don't go too crazy. So, George, goalie report starting in Philadelphia. What do you got to tell us?
All right. Well, listen, it's good news for Philadelphia, right? Sometimes it's an organization needs a kick in the butt. The firing of the coach didn't really seem to do it, maybe because they didn't put a top-notch coach in there. So I wonder if that's part of the problem here. Scott, I don't think you can win in the NHL on any kind of consistent basis unless you have a good goaltender. I've compared the football and quarterback many times. It's just, in my mind, in professional sports, quarterback, goaltending are just maybe the two most important positions in professional sports. If you don't have one, it's going to be tough to win on any kind of consistent basis. And I think his teammates, players, they feed off that. They know. If they have a good goal, if they have a brick wall in it, or if they have a sieve. You play hockey. I play hockey. Most of us play hockey. You know how it feels when a weak shot goes in, and every game you're pretty much down 1-0 before the start of the game, because your goalie's going to give up one weak goal. As an Islander fan, I've known that for years, and it's depressing knowing that you have to overcome that. And the players on the team know that as well. So I think this Hart, because of all the ballyhoo he has, now we can make an argument that he didn't deserve to be called up, which he probably didn't. You know, he really played kind of poorly in the minors other than the past 4 to 6 games before he got called up. But I don't blame the Flyers for doing it because, A, everybody else was hurt. Elliott, Stolarz, I mean, they're all hurt. Neuver, they're all gone. It was like domino. So they sort of had no choice here. But also because it sort of, you know, injects some life, some energy into the organization. So good for them. Hart playing lights out the first 2 games. Did not expect him to beat Nashville last night, but he did. So good for them. And, yes, before you ask, he's a pickup. You should go out and get him. Maybe you got lightning in a bottle here if you need a goaltender. Now, I can't guarantee he's going to keep the starting job because what's going to happen when Elliott returns? You know, Neuvirth has returned. He was only out because of paternity leave. You know, wife had a baby. Congratulations to him. He's back. You know, Stolarz is on IR with a lower body injury. I'm guessing he will just go down. Lyon. You know, really the question is what happens when Elliott comes back? And Elliott right now, he's been working with the coaching staff. They're still saying he's out indefinitely. We're not going to see him until at least January. You know, so you got at least probably 2 more weeks with Hart. Now, if Hart keeps playing lights out like he's playing right now, well, he's going to keep the job. But let's say, you know, after the initial buzz wears off a little bit, he plays solid. Not great, not poor, just solid. What happens? You know, do you get rid of Neuwirth? Do you get rid of Elliott? You could try and trade one, but good luck there. That's not going to happen. No one wants either one of those two. No one wants that. The contracts isn't going to give you anything for them. So I'm curious to see what happens here. Once Elliott returns in 2 weeks, I think it's Hart's job until then. So that's my guess here. Already mentioned the other issues of Philadelphia. You know, Stolarz on IR, lower body injury. Elliott. Really don't know what's going on with him. We knew he went back, had to go see a doctor, so we knew he suffered some kind of setback here. But it doesn't seem to be a major one, but still he's out probably minimum 10 to 14 more days. So Philadelphia is still a mess in that, but Hart's the guy you want right now. All right, other news. Boston, Rask, he's gonna start tonight. Second half of back-to-back nights. Halak started last night, played very well in the W there. So they're still splitting the role somewhat there. Washington Copley is going to start Saturday for the Capitals. This is a little bit annoying. I mean, if you're a Copley owner, because they have back-to-back games, Copley gets Buffalo. This means Holtby gets Ottawa. Yeah, you were really hoping to be reversed there, and Copley would get the Ottawa game on Sunday, but I'm guessing there they just wanted to give Holtby the extra day's rest there. So Copley tomorrow, Holtby on Sunday. Arizona, they sit down Hill earlier this week. Really, they're just playing a little game here with the NHL roster freeze. They did recall him, so he's back. He backed up Kemper the other night. Whether he's going to start or not, we don't know that. But Hill is back, and he'll be obviously back until the roster freeze is over on the 28th. Chicago, they played Scorford on IR earlier this week. They recalled Colin Delia. I mean, listen, it doesn't really matter. You don't want Delia. You barely want Cam Ward. It's just, you know, complete guessing game and prayer there. Detroit, Jordan Howard, thinking football here. Jimmy Howard was out. He had to miss the Tuesday's game. Had a little back injury, back spasms in practice. He's fine. He was okay to back up, so he's good again. If you're starting Howard, you can start him again. And for the Los Angeles Kings, not that it matters with Jonathan Quick back, but Campbell has resumed skating. He could also return in the next 10 to 14 days, although that return could be in the minors.
Oh, not too bad in terms of the goalie report. It's nice to have a couple goalie reports back-to-back that are generally innocuous in terms of, you know, all the bad news. You know, the final question I always come with in terms of asking for recommendations, particularly in those daily lineup leagues, looking to get an extra start or two in before this Christmas break and maybe when your head-to-head matchup, if that is indeed your league setup. So, George, it looks like there should be plenty of opportunities. 19 teams, 2 games this week. 17 of them are back-to-back situations. There's going to be a ton of backups playing this week, at least I'd imagine. I know you already announced a couple of them. So of those backup situations of the goalies are going to get an extra start or even a low-owned goalie who you just like the matchup, who are some of your top recommendations for this weekend? Somebody looking to cover a goalie injury or just get an extra start in? George?
Yeah, you mentioned it. Plenty of opportunities this weekend. And it's not a surprise. The NHL is going on a little vacation next week for the Christmas holiday. So they get in as many games this weekend as they possibly can. And if you can't find a backup this weekend, boy, your league's got them all. Or you're not trying very hard because they're out there. You could certainly get one. So bottom line is this. You mentioned 19 teams. Arizona, we already mentioned Hill is back, but I don't know if you want to really go with any Arizona goaltender playing Colorado, San Jose back-to-back on Saturday, Sunday. Boston, Halak really should be picked up. He's one of those guys, I've talked about this a lot, There's a reason why I don't think there are as many backups some weeks as others is because a lot of teams, fantasy teams, are keeping the backups because their backups are playing more. Halak, Grubauer, to name a couple. And there's like three, four, five others that you can go out there and grab that play. Rittich, Koskinen, and Talbot. I mean, there's a lot of teams that really do have goalies 1 and 1A rather than a starter 1 and a backup. So that's really a problem to keep in mind. That's why in some weeks we don't have as many backup goaltenders as we would like. But Halak should absolutely be grabbed there. Buffalo, we're not going to go with the backup here. Hutton's going to get the Washington start tomorrow. We'll pass there. Carolina's a mess. No, thank you. Chicago, no. Colorado, Grubauer is one of the guys. He should already be on your fantasy team. If he's not, go out and get him. Same thing with Volleyball has to be available. Columbus, I mean, Corpusano Sunday against the Devils. If he gets that start, I can think about it. Devils haven't been playing all that well. Possibility. Chad Johnson, assuming Bishop gets tomorrow against Minnesota. Chad Johnson would get the Islanders on Sunday. Islanders not scoring a lot of goals, but the second half of back-to-back games for Dallas, Islanders becoming in fresh off a couple of days off. So not a great situation. Detroit, you barely want to start Howard. Florida, Reimer. Good chance Reimer's going to get Chicago on Sunday. I expect, and even if he gets Detroit tomorrow, I'll take that as well here. So Reimer's certainly a possibility for you there. Luongo get one, Reimer gets the other. Kings, no thank you, you're going to start quick. And they're not playing well, even think about the goaltender. Scott Wedgwood, you already got your start for this week. You're not going there. Georgia for the Rangers, I think I'm going to pass against Toronto and Philadelphia. Ottawa, no thank you. Philadelphia, we discussed this. If Hart's there, you should be going out to grab him. Unless you're strong in net, you don't need it. But if you're a little weak in goal, Hart is someone you should grab. I think at least over the next 2 weeks you have somebody. Could he have some blow-ups? Absolutely he could. It's still not a great team, but he's available, and that's half the battle there. San Jose, good chance Dell is going to get Arizona on Sunday. And even if he gets the Kings tomorrow, what are you worried about? Either start, you'll take that. Aaron Dell, a very good pickup this weekend for one of those guys. Low-owned. He's not one of those 1A. He's purely the backup there, but he'll be out there. Garrett Sparks, no thank you. Two up and down, although I do like the matchup Sunday against Detroit. Odds are that's the game he's going to get. But Sparks, even in good matches, sometimes he blows up. You just never know what you're going to get from him. So he is a gamble. Vegas will pass Washington. I would have loved Copley on Sunday against Ottawa. Not liking him as much tomorrow against Buffalo. Buffalo, obviously, a better scoring team here. That's the reason why. So you have options. Imagine Halak has to be picked up. Chad Johnson, if you're looking for those one starters, same thing with Dell, same thing with Reimer. Hart, if you're looking more longer term.
All right. Some nice way to break down the options for this weekend for people looking to pick up that extra goalie start in those daily lineup leagues. Turning our attention to the skater recommendation of this team. If you're looking to get two games in, from any potential pickup of the teams that have two games this weekend, there's actually, again, a bunch of options that I really like the schedule. Colorado playing Chicago at home. Arizona on the road is appealing to me. I know Columbus isn't scoring a ton, but you're playing Philadelphia and Jersey both on the road. I know Hart's been playing well, but still, as George just said, that Philadelphia team, even though they have back-to-back wins, haven't been playing so fabulously great, and it's not like they're looking like their team on fire in the couple of games since Gordon took over. So I'm still kind of interested in a Columbus Blue Jackets as a possible pickup. Florida playing Detroit and Chicago, both on the road, but both those teams have had their significant problems. The Ottawa Senators also interested me, although, George, your information about Holtby playing against them on Sunday does kind of quash that, because they're playing New Jersey on the road, and then Washington at home. I expected them to play against Copley, and I was like, all right, this Ottawa team is obviously very flawed, but, especially with Duchesne coming back, they score reasonably well, at least when they're healthy for most of this year. So obviously the shine comes off that with that information about Holtby, but still it's in the back of my mind that I'm not dismissing it. San Jose playing L.A. and Arizona both at home is appealing, and Toronto, they're just appealing offensively most of the time, but you're playing the New York Rangers and the Detroit Red Wings both at home. That only enhances it for me. If you're just looking for a one-off for tonight, Ottawa playing against New Jersey is certainly my best pick, although Colorado playing against Chicago is intriguing as well. Saturday, even though most of those Langley lineups are pretty full, if you still have a hole in it, the Winnipeg Jets playing against Vancouver on the road is pretty intriguing. On Sunday, Toronto against Detroit is intriguing, San Jose against Arizona. are the ones that I'm gravitating to if you're looking for specific player recommendations. How about Kevin Hayes of the New York Rangers? The center's only 26% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues, but he has been pretty hot the last five games with 4 goals, 6 assists, a +4, 3 power play points. 2 shorthanded points, averaging 2.5 shots per game, and you're playing Toronto and Philadelphia. Toronto is one of the best teams in the league, but they don't exactly lock it down defensively all the time. And Philadelphia, again, we've talked about, I know Hart's playing well, but he also might not get the start, you know, since it is a back-to-back situation against the Rangers, and that would only encourage me even more. Rust for the Pittsburgh Penguins, left wing, right wing eligible, at least in Yahoo leagues, only 19% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo in the last 6 games, 8 goals, 1 assist, playing on that top line with Crosby and Gunsell. He's also a +4, has a shorthanded point, and averaging 4 shots on goal, which is double what you're generally getting from some of your better offensive players in the league. Carolina and Detroit are playing this week, and even spilling over into next week, you're playing a struggling St. Louis and Minnesota team as your first couple of games for Pittsburgh next week, so you can get a nice sort of 4-game run out of there as well. And how about Nazem Kadri? Toronto center's only 50% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues, but if you're looking for assists, he is a guy to go to. The last 5 games, a goal, 6 assists, +5, 13 penalty minutes, a power play point, 3 shots on goal per game, and if you just happen to have face-off wins as a category in league, he's also pretty good with that as well. And as we know, they got the good schedule this weekend playing the Rangers and Detroit at home. All right, folks, there is your fantasy reports for this Friday, December 21st. Let's turn our attention, George, to those power rankings that we started talking about on Monday's show. We talked about Toronto, Winnipeg, and Nashville as our three unanimous best teams in the NHL. In our top three, we matched Toronto and Washington as our two next best teams. You had Toronto at 4, while I had Washington at 4, and obviously flipping it 4-5. But, you know, that's, you know, pretty close. You know, so you're just splitting hairs there, is what I'm saying. But so let's pick up the conversation with Toronto and Washington. Now, obviously, I want to know how good you think these teams are. You know, obviously it's part of the purpose of this specific conversation, but I'm curious if you think there is a notable drop-off between those top three teams of Toronto, Winnipeg, and Nashville, and Toronto, Washington. I mean, are you just talking about splitting hairs between how good those are, or is there a notable step down when you get to those two teams? And, of course, what do you like about Toronto and Washington? You know, and are there any sort of obvious flaws that you think need to be addressed if they are going to make deep playoff runs? Obviously, Washington trying to repeat and Toronto trying to get deep into the playoffs for the first time in many, many years. So just randomly picking, why don't we start with Washington, George? When you look at them, how much do you like what they're doing this year? Do you look at them and say, oh, yeah, I'm not necessarily calling them the Cup favorite, but I could see them repeating. Is that a reality for you, or do you hesitate and hedge on that and need to see a little bit more before you sort of go down that road with the Washington Capitals? George?
Well, they don't seem to be, or if they were suffering from the Cup hangover, it's over now. They've gotten back to the groove of things, the Capitals have. So it's the first thing you look for here. Are they still a hungry team? And they seem to be where, you know, they're playing. You know, it's not like they're, you know, wallowing in third place. You're like, oh, my God, what's going on here? They're barely a wild card team. They're in first place in the division. I understand the division is not very good. I mean, you look at it, what, 1 through 6 is separated by 11 points, 5.5 games. You know, the Capitals have been a solid team, certainly not great. They are plus 21, which is, you know, nice overall. I think they're starting to hit their stride now. I think they'll play better as the season goes on here. So I certainly like what I see from the Capitals. Do I think they're a Cup favorite? Or, I mean, I didn't think they were a Cup favorite last year. You know, I think things, it's funny. I thought they had a better team in other seasons. And then last year, they actually won the Cup. You know, they had a better team in other seasons where they didn't win it. Last year, they won it when I didn't think they had as good a team. So you wonder about that. Things they've had to overcome. Oshie's injury, which kept them out for about 2 weeks. Tom Wilson getting suspended over and over again. What crap he brings to the table. I mean, let's just say this team didn't win the Cup last year. and didn't even get to the Cup. When I think this is a Stanley Cup team, I think they're a competitive team. But I would think they're behind Tampa Bay, probably Toronto. And that might be it. I don't know if there's anybody else. I don't think there's anybody in the Metro I would say is better than them. I think Pittsburgh I would say is about even. Columbus, but they always seem to falter when it matters. So that's the way I would go with that. I think they're the third-best team in the Eastern Conference here, so I think there's work to be done. I think they'll make those changes or make those additions at the deadline. Now, I think offense, they're fine. They'll score goals. Do I think they could use another forward? Sure. Not top three, but a top six forward could certainly help there. But I look at defense here. I think they could use another defenseman like most teams. I'll say this again. We're going to say this about every team. Every team can use a defenseman. I think they're a little top-heavy. You know, you got Carlson, he's great. Niskanen, I like Niskanen. Orlov, Kempe, they're nice guys. But I think they could use a 3-6 guy, so a second-line pairing guy, some depth there. I know Orpik's on IR, and that's part of the problem there. I think this is a good, solid overall team, Scott. But if you were to ask me, do I think they're a Stanley Cup favorite? No, I don't. But I didn't think that way last year either, and they won it.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good breakdown of the Washington Capitals. You know, George, you've probably heard me say this a number of times over the years, especially at the beginning of the season when we're doing our season previews and whatnot. One of the things that I think, I don't know about necessary, but one element that I think is a good thing for a Stanley Cup winning team or even just a conference final team that's looking to repeat that and obviously take the next step to winning a championship is to have at least just a little bit of change, a new play, not a huge amount of turnover, because, you know, when you have a lot of turnover, you know, that could sort of, you know, really throw a wrench into years of taking a long time to sort of figure things out. But having that one rookie who's sort of injecting life into the lineup, or that one key acquisition, or a change of coach, I think is a very healthy and good thing 14 because when you come back, it's the same. You got the same everything, the same lineup. You're a good team. You tend to sort of be lax, and just that little bit of change, like I said, it infused a little bit of life. You know, that one player you got to work things into. So you sort of, the player's got to pay attention a little bit. Don't get, you know, sort of lax. And I think that you have nothing, you know, Trotz wasn't a good coach. I think he's a great coach. He's one of the better coaches in the league, you know. But I think it was sort of healthy for Reardon to be taking over here. And I think that's one of the things. So the first couple of months, they were kind of like figuring it out a little bit, getting used to like the little tweaks in the game here, you know, getting over to a little bit of Cup hangover and some of the injuries that you mentioned, Tom Wilson and his suspensions, you know, and it sort of caused them to sort of fight through that a little bit. And I think it's one of the things that has sort of kept them sharp, or at least as you just said, they're sharpening up, they're finding their game this last month here. And I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of the one thing that they need, because I think they do need another top six forward. Verana, I was sort of looking a little bit more from, he has taken, at least in my mind, a little bit of a step forward that you want him to, but not as much as I think they need, and hasn't quite had the consistency. And Burakovsky, which a lot of people have been talking about lately, he just has never sort of bloomed here, you know, and I think he's the one guy, and I know there's been whispers about him lately, specifically in terms of trade rumors. I know he was a healthy scratch for four straight games before getting back in the lineup the last game. You know, part of the reason, you know, Reardon was like, well, we're winning, and I didn't want to change the lineup, you know. And here you have a player who I believe is making $3 million in the last year of a contract, and he hasn't quite bloomed into that offensive – not that you expect him to be a major force, but I think we all expect him to develop into a reliable second-line player and contribute more offensively, and that just hasn't happened. And I understand being hesitant to trade somebody like that away, especially since if you look at his, like, advanced statistics and Corsi and things like that, those numbers are actually very good. They're very solid. They're better than solid. But it hasn't translated to production. And the reason why I'm talking about him so much is that I think he's the piece that you're dangling to get that trade acquisition of another forward that you were talking about, or that defenseman that they could use here to strengthen this team for a chance at another run. Because let's be honest, George, this team is in win-now mode. Ovechkin, yes, he's not slowing down, but he is 33, you know. Backstrom's not a youngster anymore, although he's not old yet, you know. Sort of same thing with T.J. Oshie. So you're all in here, you know? I mean, we were all sort of worried about Carlson, even though he started dispelling all, at least here in this first year, this new contract, dispelling, you know, all the worry that everybody sort of was on and on about in the offseason. You know, again, we're all saying that the, you know, latter part of that contract, maybe even just a couple of seasons, Carlson's going to sort of be more of an anchor than the guy leading your team. So you're all in now. And I think, you know, because of the things that I mentioned, the fact that that Burkowski hasn't sort of really, you know, bloomed offensively, even though that he's young and sort of controllable because he's a restricted free agent, I think he's the piece that other teams are interested in. Because he is just 23 and because he still has those good, you know, advanced statistics numbers, I think a lot of people feel that he still is capable of blooming. But he's that, you know, that piece of the puzzle that you're going to dangle to get the extra piece to sort of put, I don't know, put them over the top, but to strengthen this team, you know, for their playoff run. And I think you said it right. You know, I mean, this is a good team. This is one of the better teams in the East, but I don't think they're anywhere as good as Tampa Bay. And I understand why you said that, you know, and for me, it was a debate in terms of Washington or Toronto in terms of who to have over who. And the only reason why I have Washington above Toronto for myself is just because even though that defense for Washington doesn't sort of impress me as it did 2 or 3 years ago, they're still a lot more settled in defense and especially in goal. And I'm more reliably comfortable with that than I am with Toronto. And so that's sort of what inched Washington above Toronto for me. And turning our attention to Toronto, George, when you look at them, obviously we joked quite a lot at the beginning of this season that once they signed Tavares, they're going 82-0. They're going to win every game 6-0. We never really meant that, you know, but they are pretty impressive. The offense overall, and or at least that top nine, is sort of rounding out into shape, especially that Nylander's back, pretty much just as good as we thought it would. But I bring up that question about the defense and, to a slightly lesser extent, the goaltending. How much of a bugaboo is it for, in your opinion, for the Toronto Maple Leafs? Can they win? Can they get to the conference finals? Can they get past Tampa Bay in the second round, and at least get to the conference finals, if not the cup finals, in your opinion, without sort of strengthening goal or defense? And obviously most of us are looking at defense. I think we're all convinced that they're key, that Anderson's their guy. But when you look at this Maple Leafs team, just how good are they, especially if they don't address some of the needs that we all are talking about with them? George, Maple Leafs, what do you think?
Well, I think I agree with what you said. I mean, and what do you mean? We didn't expect them to go 82-0. I was dead serious. I'm surprised they've lost 12 games. They've lost 10 in regulation, 2-0 in overtime. Shocked, I tell you. They should be 82-0. I mean, you look at this team. We don't have to talk about the offense. We know the offense is there. No matter what combination they decide to use those forwards, they're going to score goals. The question for this team is always going to be the defense. And as you said, to a lesser extent, the goaltending. You know, Frederik Hansen is a good, solid goaltender, but he's not a great goaltender. You know, if he was, maybe we wouldn't be talking about this as much. But defense is going to be an issue here. The regular season really means nothing for this team. And listen, that's true for several teams. It means nothing with Tampa Bay. You know, it means nothing for Nashville and Winnipeg. It's just that's a seeding. That's all it is, a seeding. See if you can win the division. It's all that matters. Other than that, you know, you know you're going to the playoffs. You're not going to fall out of it. For Toronto, I mean, Morgan Riley, Gardner, nice defenseman. But after that, there's not much there. There's just not much there. And you wonder what's going to happen in future years. Now you keep re-signing all these forwards. Are you going to have any defenseman left? You know, how are you going to re-sign Jake Gardner? And that's going to be an issue here. They've gone really top-heavy here. And, you know, I think the mistake they made, not so much the Nylander thing, although I've said it before, I would have traded him. He could have gotten a very good young defenseman in return and something else. But they were signing Marleau. Yeah, you signed him to that contract. Now, that's going to come back to haunt player who's well past his prime. And you signed him as a veteran you don't really need. He's an extra. So I think that's going to be something they'll have to live with here. But other than that, I mean, the team is stacked. Toronto's problem is going to be the way the NHL playoff system is set up. They're going to be – I think Tampa Bay's going to win the division. So Tampa's going to play that wild card team. And that forces the Maple Leafs, in all likelihood – I understand they're not there yet. I think Buffalo probably trails off a little bit. They're a playoff team. But I think they trail off a little bit. I think Boston catches them. So that puts Toronto against Boston round one. Do I think Toronto's the better team? Sure. But it's a big-time rivalry. It's a big-time series. It's going to be tough for them to keep advancing because then round two, you got to go to Tampa Bay. You know, it shouldn't be that way, you know, because if they were the third seed, then they might be up against a lesser team. You know, they'd be up, they're playing a team that's if the Angels did the 1-8, you know, they would be if they had the second most points, they'd be the third seed. They would win their division. The winner of the Metro would get the second seed, and they'd be three. And they would play a lesser team, maybe a little easier road for them. But just like Winnipeg and Nashville, it's so hard for them to get far because you know they're gonna smack up against each other in round two. Same thing Toronto and Tampa. And Toronto's going to do that after playing a tough team in Boston, where Tampa should have an easier road because they may end up playing a team like the Islanders, Montreal, the Rangers, whoever squeaks in there, one of the wild card teams, not as hard a team to beat. So I think that's going to be a problem for Toronto. That's why I think winning this division is important because you want to get that easier first-round matchup. So I think that's where Toronto's going to run into problems here. That and the defense. I don't know if a defense can hold up against a back-to-back series against Boston. You know, again, you play that top line. You know, Bergeron will be healthy by then. And you're playing Bergeron. You know, you're playing Marchand. You know, you're playing Pasternak. And then you get to go on. I assume you'll win that. And you get all the fun that is, all the fun that is Tampa Bay. And everybody, they can throw at you. They can throw as much offense as you can at you. So that's no joy at all there. So I think Toronto, they need to find another defender. You know, and I know, once again, I'll say that for every team, but since they're in the spot they are, the contending team, a Stanley Cup contending team, and they are, you know, you can make an argument. They really have to go for broke. This is why I say it again with Nylander. I wouldn't have done that. You know, they didn't need more offense. With or without Nylander, they're going to score enough goals. I just don't know if they can stop them, stop enough. You know, they can keep the puck out of their zone. When you don't, you know, this would be different if you had if you had Henrik Lundqvist in his prime in net, all right, then I'm good with it. You have a fantastic goaltender. He can make up for the mistakes. Frederik Anderson can't, at least not on a consistent basis. So that's the issue there. So that's my worry here. I think they really do need another defenseman, but I just don't know if they're going to be able to do it. Those guys are hard to find. You know, especially at the trade deadline, sure, you'll have options, but you won't have great options. Before Neil, if you were to trade him, I think you did have great options. You know, the question is, could you have found a deal you wanted? And they really seemed like they didn't want to trade Neil. They really wanted him in the fold. But that's why, in my mind, this is going to be something that comes back to haunt them. It's going to be hard to win 4-3, 5-4 games in the playoffs. It's going to be very difficult to do. Especially, you look at Tampa, and I'll say it again. Your best-case scenario is playing him in round two. That's your best case. I mean, in that case, they can score as many goals as you can, and their defense is better, their goaltending is better. How are you a better team than them? So that's the issue over and over again. I think they're a defenseman short, and I think they're probably a good defenseman short. And I think that's – or you got to sign two or trade for two really solid defenders to really get that depth there. I think this is going to be Toronto's undoing, and I just don't think there's anything – there's much they can do about it right now unless they're going to try and make a big deal and trade one of those forwards, which I think is harder now than it might have been a month ago.
Yeah, I think that's a really good breakdown. And you kind of already addressed the follow-up question that I was going to ask of not just, okay, I think we all think that, you know, we've all been saying it's the obvious thing that we're all talking about across hockey that this team could use and want another defenseman, but is just another good defenseman, a legit top five guy, even a legit top four guy. Is that enough? Because you look at the team and there's just that gaping hole on the top pair right side. If you get a top pair right defenseman, you move Haynesy down to the third pair with Dermott. Your second pairing is Gardner and Zatsev. I'm kind of good with that. You know, I mean, obviously everybody started talking about Pietrangelo, especially a couple of weeks ago, you know, when, you know, not that St. Louis is called a fire sale, but they're obviously open for business, and they've made it known that they're, you know, any veteran, any guy who's in their late 20s and older is at least up for conversation. You know, Tarasenko is rumored to be up for conversation, although not Schwartz, who's only like 6 months younger than Tarasenko, so I don't quite get that, but, you know, that's here or there. So if you get like a second pair guy, are you going to force them into the top pair minutes? Is that going to be good enough? You know, is that going to be the classic, you know, thing of like, okay, that's a reasonably good guy, but you're sort of forcing them into, you know, a higher level of time on ice. and things like that than they're capable of doing, hence sort of hurting yourself. And how are you going to get that top-level guy, that top-pair guy, unless you are willing to trade one of those forwards, you know, because if you're just looking to trade even one of your better defensemen, like Liljegren, you know, they're really good defensive prospect that there was a number one pick not last year, the year before. Let's say you're willing to trade him, you know, whose stock is still pretty good. It's not like his stock has slipped. And your number one, that's a pretty darn good package. But a playoff team's not going to want that because only a team that is sort of, you know, that is out of the playoffs, only a team that's selling, you know, selling off their big guys like a theoretically St. Louis, you know, is going to be interested in that. And that obviously limits your options. And then if you're looking at the non-playoff teams, how many of those non-playoff teams have that top pair right-handed defenseman that you need outside of Pietrangelo and St. Louis, which is far from a sure thing, you know, so... to your point, George, I think it's going to be very difficult to get that guy that we all go, okay, oh yeah, that now Toronto's up there and pushing into that top three, you know, or top two teams, or they're right there with Tampa Bay and matching them, you know, stride for stride there, you know. So it's going to be interesting to see what Dubas does. And actually, one of the side things that I think is sort of interesting and a little bit weird about Toronto, at least in the rumor world, is that, you know, I've been hearing from weeks from all of, like, the, you know, the Driegers and the McKenzies and LeBrons, you know, of the hockey world, you know, that, yes, Dubas is looking for defensemen and specifically a top-pair and right-hand defenseman. But Babcock and the coaching staff want a power forward. Where are you going to put him? But, you know, unless you're trading away some of these guys that we're saying we don't think is going to get traded away here. I mean, I could see if you're looking, you know, to tweak and if, you know, if it wasn't an issue of salary cap and it wasn't an issue of space in your lineup, I could see how a legit power forward like a Wayne Simmonds, whose name has been out there, you know, how that would maybe even uptick this already great forwards group a little bit more. But I don't see how it's a need. And there's been a lot of talk in recent weeks how, hey, if the coaching staff gets what they want, that's what they would want. Maybe even above that defenseman that we're talking about. And I kind of just don't get it, you know. Unless one of that those top nine forwards is so disgruntled and we don't know about it and you're looking to get rid of them, like that's the only possible scenario where that even remotely makes any sense to me. All right, last question, George, which I teased to start off. Washington and Toronto, is there a big, notable step down from the top three, or is it relatively close that if Washington does trade for maybe a bottom three defenseman and gets a top six forward, you know, if Toronto does get at least a top four defenseman, if they make those kind of moves, do you think Washington and Toronto are capable of being right there neck and neck with Tampa Bay, Nashville, and Winnipeg? Or even if they make those moves, you still consider them a half a step to a step behind? Last question before we wrap up for the day, George. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think they're even with the – unless it's a huge move, man, I don't see that happening. I think they're going to be behind those two. I do. Now, that being said, I mean, I think Tampa Bay's the best team in the East. I don't even think it's all that close. You know, there's no weaknesses there. I mean, you think of how well they played, and a lot of that was out – Vasilevsky. Think about that. That's just crazy. This team has crazy depth all over the place. Could they use another defender? Sure, but it's not a necessity. They certainly don't need any more on offense. I'm sure they'll add pieces at the deadline, certain role players, whether it be a tough guy, whether it be a penalty killer or something like that. Most teams do saw things like that. But this team is set. They're just set here. You know, we'll discuss Winnipeg and Nashville more when it comes to them. Washington is a nice team. You know, they are a team. They're not really they have a good goaltender, solid defense. They can score goals. You got Ovechkin, who's probably my favorite player in the NHL. But, you know, they don't wow you. They really don't wow you. You know, that's not a negative, by the way, because this team doesn't need to wow you. But do I think they're short? Do I think they're behind the other great teams? Yeah, I do. You know, I think it'd be interesting to see them in a series versus, let's say, Toronto. You know, not so much the Lightning, because I think the Lightning is the best team, but against Toronto, who also have obvious holes. can Washington attack those holes, game plan to attack those holes. I think it'd be fun to see there. It's interesting to me. But I think Washington does need to make some moves. But I'll say it again. I didn't think this was the best team in the East last year. I think they're a good team. Certainly not the worst team. I think silly like that. But I think they were the best team, but they went there. So they've been through the trials. You know, they've been through. They know what it takes to win now. I think that helps them. You know, maybe they were down 2-0 to Columbus in the first round of the playoffs last year. Still came back and won it. Extremely impressive. Nothing's going to scare them. I think that's a big thing there. But to answer your question, yeah, unless they were able to make some huge move, which I really doubt, I don't see where I'll be ever putting them in my rankings above the Lightning, above the Jets, the Preds, and probably not above the Maple Leafs either, although that I could see happening if they were to add the right piece.
Yeah, you know, it's sort of just because you mentioned it a couple times, it's sort of interesting with Washington because I absolutely agree. Like 2-3 years ago, this Washington team on paper was clearly a lot better and deeper, and it's so interesting how they got off over the hump when they had to sort of let some players go and they weren't as deep. You know, it's sort of almost like, okay, we have less than we have to do than we had before. We need to buckle down more. Our role players need to be stronger, and our star players need to be star players, and that's essentially what happened in the playoffs. And again, to further the point that you made, not only they were down 2-0 in the first round of that playoffs to Columbus, they were a crossbar away in overtime from being down 3-0. And obviously the playoffs, you know, likely play out completely differently if they do go down 3-0 in that first round series. But yes, you know, I completely agree. I think Toronto and Washington are, you know, right now a full step behind those top three. If they make some of the moves that we're talking, they're a half step. But in a tough playoff series, I can see them overcoming those teams. I'm not going if it's Washington or Toronto against Tampa Bay in the playoffs, I'm not completely writing those teams off. I do think I'm sure, at least I'm sitting here right now, I'm clearly picking Toronto Tampa Bay to beat those teams, but I'm probably picking them to beat them in 7 games. You know, so, and we all know in hockey, you know, a 7-game series can go either way, especially when it gets to that game 7. So, you know, they're not so far behind these other three teams that we're talking about that I'd be like, what? They beat them? You know, but yes, I completely agree with you that they're a little bit behind, and I would expect the three teams ahead of them whenever they could potentially meet in the playoffs for those three teams to beat them. But I don't think it's any sort of Grand Canyon in terms of how far behind they are. All right, folks, that's all that we have for today. George, I'm going to let you go as I wrap things up and just remind everybody that every Monday, every Friday, 2 o'clock, we are here for your listening pleasure for all your hockey needs, whether it be fantasy hockey or on the ice hockey. Even though next week is a holiday week, George and I will be here both Monday and Friday to talk about hockey. We're going to sort of focus a little bit more, a little bit deeper on these the rest of these power rankings next week, specifically on Monday's show. You know, since it is kind of a shortened week, it'll give us a little opportunity to sort of shorten down or have a smaller fantasy reports and spend a little bit more time on these, power rankings. Getting some more interesting questions, too, about the teams below out now that we're sort of outside the top five. You know, what team is most likely here in our list to sort of rise in the rankings by the time we get to the playoffs? What team in our list, you know, is most likely maybe drop in the rankings by the time we get to the playoff time? And some just the interesting questions of all those teams in the middle of the pack, those teams at the bottom, you know, are they dead-end teams? Are they going to be sort of selling things off and rebuilding and stripping things down? Because I find it kind of interesting that the most divergent opinions that George and I have is late in those rankings in terms of who are the less good teams in the NHL. So I'll have all that for you and more next week. Have a good hockey weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday.